So a little bit ago when I said, let's take a deep breath, I knew that we would be singing that song. And if we couldn't take a deep breath in the midst of the beauty of that song, well, we're missing something. So thank you. I told the choir before the service began that I love it when we have music like that, because it means that whatever I say doesn't matter, because we've already had such a moment of God's presence and God's grace. So thank you all for that beautiful song. I want to invite you all to have your hymnal open to number 286. It says in our bulletin that we're going to sing after the sermon, Spirit of the Living God, Fall Afresh on Me. That's a lie. We're not going to sing it then. We're going to sing it at the end of the service. And during the sermon, you're going to sing with me at various times verses from this song, 286. So just have yourself ready and prepared. So the scripture that Sigrid just read for us, and from, it's always wonderful to listen to various translations of the Bible and to hear, so this contemporary version, the Message, to hear the story of Jesus' baptism is a wonderful story. So when we talked about with the keiki just a little bit ago, and imagine that moment, if you can, imagine that you were back there and you're in the midst of this moment, and the folks are all gathered together, and there's John, and everybody at this point thinks that John's a pretty big deal. John's a pretty big deal, such a big deal that the political and religious leaders are not liking him at all. And that sort of adds to his sort of gravitas, that the folks that are in power don't like him. And so folks are looking at John, is this the one who's the long-awaited Messiah? And John surprises them and says, no, it's not me. One who's coming, and in fact is here right amongst us, who happens to be my relative, according to Luke. He's the one. He's the one, and he's right there. And so Jesus joins with everybody else. Joins with everybody else. We don't have a separate baptism for the Son of God. The Son of God is baptized with everyone else. And imagine, as we talked about with the keiki, what happens at this moment is that this dove comes down, a voice from heaven is heard. I mean, it's one of those things that if we could go back in a time machine, it would be lovely to go back to that moment and enjoy and experience the surprise, the joy of that moment. And what is important, certainly, is what you hear God saying in all of this. This is my beloved, with whom I am well pleased, the pride of my life, as Sigrid just read. But what's also really important is what John says just before that. Because when John introduces Jesus, John says, this is the one who is going to clean house. In the New Revised Standard Version, it's coming in with a willowing fork or something like that, and is going to burn the chaff and all of that. And what you hear and what you realize, when I've always heard this, is I thought this is a pretty violent metaphor that John is using. Because what John says is, this one is going to come in, he's going to clean house, and that which is bad is going to be burned in fire, and that which is good is going to have all good things come to it. And I've always thought that this is, and in fact not thought, but known, that this is one of those scriptures that preachers that like to deal with hellfire and damnation, they love that scripture. Because here it is, God coming in and separating the good from the bad, and the bad are going to burn and burn and burn. Except for, and I love the fact that we have the gift of what are called biblical commentaries, which allow us to go and take a scholarly look at what is there, and you realize that what John is actually sharing is a metaphor that makes sense for an agrarian society. And what John is talking about is not separating the bad people from the good people and burning up the bad people, but instead John is talking about the process that everyone in that agrarian world would know about what happens with wheat. Because when you harvest wheat, what you get is the wheat grain, which is what you really want. It's where the nutritional value is. Surrounding and part of that wheat grain is what's known as the chaff. And that chaff has had a purpose in the development of the wheat grain and the wheat heart, is to protect it while it develops. But once the grain has fully developed, the chaff has lost its purpose. And in fact, it gets in the way of the nutrition that comes to you from the wheat plant. And so everyone who is in that agrarian society dealing with harvesting knows that they have to have a process where they separate the chaff from the wheat. And when you think about that, what is that is the reality that is in our life as well. When we grow up with an ego. We grow up with an ego that surrounds us, that protects us as we are growing up, helping us to understand our place in the world. But as we mature and we get older, we need to let go of that which says, I am so special. And we begin to need to let go of that so that we then allow that which is at our very heart, that which is at our very essential, central part, the wheat heart, the wheat grain, that which is, connects our heart to God's heart, our spirit to God's spirit. That's what we need to focus on. And the ministry that John says that the Messiah, Jesus, is going to do is he is going to help us separate that which has come to us from culture, which has come to us from family, which has come to us from our own ego, separate that which has kept us away from that which our pure connection to God. Help us get rid of that, and it will be tossed aside, burned aside, so that that which is at our purest essence, our place where we are most connected to the Spirit of God, is able to shine, is able to breathe through fully and completely. John is not talking about sending people off to hellfire and damnation. John is talking about our own purification so that we can be that which God has called us to be. And in the midst of all of that, there is this voice that says, this is the one with whom I am pleased to dwell. This is the one with whom I am pleased. And you think about this 30 years after, wise men from afar who were not Jewish have come and followed a star and have found their way to the one with whom God is pleased to dwell as a baby. Now, 30 years later, God is proclaiming to those who have always known themselves to be the people of God that here I am pleased to dwell. Here you can find me. And what's important to realize is that's what God has been about from day one. It doesn't just start with that moment of baptism of Jesus. That process of helping us to be able to be all that God has created us to be has been there since day one. Jim Manley, who wrote the song 286, Spirit, Spirit of Gentleness, understood this in deep and profound ways, and he put into music that which words in many ways cannot say anywhere near as profoundly. So I want to invite you all to join me in singing the chorus and verse 1 of hymn 286, Spirit of Gentleness. Listen to those words that you've just sang. At the moment in which the world is created, the Spirit of God is hovering over the world as it is called into being. If we think of that Big Bang of 13 billion or so years ago, and at that moment where all that is life comes into being and God is present in all that is. So that the very stars that are beyond what we can see is made of the very same substance that we are. And God is present there, pure in form. And we are called into the same way. We are the dust of those stars. We are the same thing as the of the bud of the gold tree that is right out here that is waiting its day in a few months to come into bloom. We are the same as the snows of Mauna Kea. We are the same as the beautiful pink of the pitaya fruit in its lusciousness that is there. We are the same as the scent of the kaffir lime that makes our curry. We are all those things that God has called into being from that very first moment, pure. The chaff is gone. And yet what we have known in the history of humankind is that we're really good in the midst of all that purity and all that beauty and all that wonder of gathering chaff around us and creating something that may well block that which is at our purest and most essence. You think about the story of Adam and Eve. When Adam decides, once he eats the apple, that it's time to throw Eve under the bus, even though he didn't know there were buses at that time. If he did, he would have. You think of the story of Cain and Abel, and Cain killing his brother Abel, and then saying, "Am I my brother's keeper?" And every time I read that, I always say, "Yes! Yes, you are! Why do you ask such a silly question?" And yet, there it is. The story of Jacob and Esau, where Jacob decides to take away the birthright of his brother. Story of the people of Israel enslaved, a Pharaoh that decides to take them and work them and work them and work them. And God speaks into each of these moments ultimately, speaks into each of these moments in a way that allows for the goodness, for the message that you, beloved, and I want to do all that I can to allow you to experience that. God speaks in the ways of prophets and comes to the people. And so you have a person like Joseph, cocky, arrogant Joseph, who becomes Joseph the seer, who creates a home for his ohana when famine is where they are. Of Moses, ponderous and stumbling along, who hears the voice of God and is able to have the cojones to go to Pharaoh and say, "Let my people go," and is able to lead a people to understand a way of living a life that is pono, that is right, that is balanced. And yet in the midst of all these amazing prophets in which God speaks to the people to give them the opportunity to indeed be all that God has called them to be, we know that the history of humankind continues to find ways for that chaff to build upon chaff. And so more prophets come to us. We have the prophet Amos, who looks at the people of Israel that have now become sort of rich and fat with power, and he says, "It is time for you to remember to let justice roll on like a mighty river, let righteousness flow like an ever-flowing stream." The prophet Isaiah, who reminds us in the scripture we just heard, is, "I have called you each by name," and later says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon us, to proclaim good news to the poor, to bind the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom to the captives, sight for the blind." And then there's the prophet Micah, who says, "You know what I require of you from the voice of God. You know what I require of you, but to do justice, to love tenderly, walk humbly with your God." The prophets speak to us in wonderful ways to call us back to that place where we understand that we are indeed beloved of God. And Jim Manley captures that in the second verse. Let us join in the chorus and the verse. Spoke through their prophets to open their eyes. And yet the biblical witness tells us their eyes seem to always want to go to a place of being closed. And so it is, as you follow the history of from the prophets to the time of Jesus, that you find this time that there in the ancient lands, that the people who are in power, the religious and the political leaders, seem to favor their power and their position far more than doing that which the prophets have called to them. They seem to be willing to chase after all the little baubles and trinkets that those that are truly in power offer out to them like little gold rings to grab at. So first there's the Assyrians, and then the Babylonians, and then the Persians, and then the Greeks, and then the Romans, offering these little trinkets to those who are in power. And those who are in power are willing to go after those trinkets, and in the process, create injustice for their very own people. And so looking into this situation, the biblical story tells us that God acts and God speaks, and it begins with a star. Begins with a star and a child that is born in the most humble of ways, in the most humble of beginnings. And that child grows into an adult and becomes the one who shall be baptized. And God speaks through that one and speaks to all of us and says, follow, listen, allow your spirit to be made free. Allow the chaff to come off. And allow the wheat heart to come forward in all of its blessedness and all of its beauty. Verse 3. Down in the city you called once again. Down in the cities through time, wherever it is on whatever continent, whether it be a city in an island in the middle of the Pacific at a community just below a freeway, you call once again. And you call and the voice of the scriptures calls out to us, and we hear Matthew, it says all that Jesus says to us, all you are weary and heavy laden, come to me and I will give you rest. It is in that rest that we're able to let go of the chaff. Take my yoke upon you. Learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. Down in the city, God calls once again. Free yourself. Free yourself from all that separates you from that which God has created in you. The beauty, the wonder, the joy, the peace that is in your heart that connects spirit to spirit, heart to heart. Allow that to be and allow it in all that you do. It is in that spirit every single Sunday that we, in the midst of our worship, that we gather together in prayer. For when we ask for prayers, whether they be prayers of joy or prayers of need, prayers where there is hurt, we are asking in so many words for us to be able to allow our very presence to know the presence of God. We are asking ourselves as a community to step in where those who have felt that the chaff has encumbered them in such a way that they cannot know the presence of God, that we might find the way to do so. So I ask, let's take a moment in the midst of all of this to think on what it is that we wish to pray for. We've already heard our sister Teresa is going to be moving someday soon, and we look forward to that, and we offer our prayers for that move. And so we say, God, hear our prayers. What other prayers would we lift up at this time?